My name is Carla, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Carla.
And I've actually never done this before. I've really, like, taken this whole time to talk, so... And I decided that I wasn't going to, organize myself. I didn't want to make it all formal for myself. Instead, I wanted to just really let myself be guided through telling my story. So I guess I would start by saying that I definitely was raised, I earned my seat in here by being raised in a compulsive family. And so I really belong in and would welcome any family member into these rooms. My mom is a compulsive eater, compulsive overeater, and my dad numbed himself with 50 years of really heavy cigarette smoking. And both of my brothers have had a lot of weight problems as well. And I'm the oldest. My brothers are both younger. And the basic way that my mom expressed love in our growing up, once we were past those very, very early years, was through food. So I still remember occasionally coming home from school and having a very sweet smell meet me because my mom had been baking, and it was seductive and, a huge treat, and she's a good cook and she's a good baker. But we were only allowed, one or two. So that control on it made it always like there was never enough. I always wanted more. And I don't remember a whole lot more about food in my childhood other than that I was a very good girl. I was a really good student, and I was a good, obedient girl in general. And so I always finished everything on my plate. And the middle brother was somewhat picky and with food, but my youngest brother was super, super picky with food. And he really only ate a very few things, and absolutely refused to expand beyond that. And so the fights at the dinner table between my mom and my younger brother were awful. And my middle brother and I just remember the torture of that and how my mother never won. She couldn't force my younger brother to eat the food. So the fights were for nothing. And then skipping ahead, I definitely remember my family is very liberal politically, and so we were boycotting during the time of boycotting grapes, green grapes, which was sometime in the 60s. And I loved green grapes. So I was babysitting, and the mom said, "Help yourself to anything in the fridge." And there was this huge plate of grapes, and I did the compulsive overeater thing of eating a couple here and then a couple there. But by the time they got home, like, half the platter was empty. But she had told me, "Have anything you want," and it was fine with her. But, that awareness of, wow, that was a lot of grapes, and also that, like, it looked, I don't know, looked bad to leave the full platter with all the little empty grape stems. And little did I know, I found out years later that mom also was a compulsive overeater, so she probably noticed, which not everybody would have. But I definitely binged on sweet things in their house, too, because they had stuff around the house that I didn't. And so I would always wait till I got the kids to sleep, and then I would go, not heavy binges, not like my later years when I was a professional binger, but I knew that I was drawn to sugar, and So the next kind of significant marker in my relationship with food was when I was first 16 and 17, 18, I was, I fell in love with somebody, and we were in a band together, so I was with him all the time. And most people assumed we were a couple, but he had only, like, sort of acted like he might want to date me when we first started singing together and then never again. But I was sort of led on by that, but also this guy, he's still a good friend of mine. He's such a sweetheart, and he's very naturally affectionate. He's the kind of person that just throws his arm around you and calls you honey, and not in a, I don't mean, he calls his friend, his male friend, honey too. Like, he's just very effusive and warm. And doesn't hesitate to be physical in that way. And that was totally new to me. In my family, nobody touched anybody except to hit. Like my sibling, you know, my brothers and I hit. My parents didn't hit. And so having someone put his arm around me and praise me for the good job I was doing in the band, like, that, I would have followed him anywhere, you know. And I really was deeply in love with him. But he had a girlfriend, and he was dating her really regularly. And so I kept my feelings secret. And that secrecy is something my sponsor and I have talked a lot about over the years. Because that secrecy, and that degree of secrecy really, really helped my illness. And the girlfriend he was dating started dieting. And I thought, I think I'll try that, because maybe if I'm thinner than she is, he'll like me better, which is just a teenage thing to think. But I went ahead and tried. And the thing is, I had never messed with my food before, so my weight had always been really stable. But now I started restricting. And in fact, I even, by the time I was, I think, 17 or 18, I started experimenting with the Stillman diet. And I did lose weight, but then it made me crave. So then I would lose the weight, and then I would go off the diet, and I'd start eating stuff. And I didn't need to diet, but I kept thinking in this lovelorn way that maybe he would choose me. And finally, I did confess to him how I was feeling. And to his credit, I mean, he didn't, like, run away from me, and we stayed friends. And little by little, I came to see that he wasn't really the best person for me. But by that time, the eating patterns had already been, like, really distorted. And my awareness of my body and my image of my body was already distorted. Finally, like a year later or so, by the time I was getting closer to 19, I had not really, I guess, sort of a crush on another guy, and this guy was really in love with me, and I thought I wanted to date, and the first time he touched me, I thought I was going to throw up and pass out. I didn't know which one first. And I stood there. I don't even know how I got through that, as he put his arms around me and was kissing me. And my terror, I just don't even know how to describe that kind of terror, was so ginormous. And I just thought I was going to be sick on the floor. And then it stopped, mercifully, and we were in a dorm I was visiting, and I went to my bed, and he went to his bed, and clearly something had happened, but he didn't understand what, and I could not talk about it. And so I just avoided him for the next several days that I was there. It was really awful. I felt so bad for him. And I also started binging. So in probably 2 weeks, I don't even know how much weight I put on. I just started cramming food in my mouth. It was the only way I knew. And odd, because I'd never done that before. So I gained all this weight. I couldn't understand. I was still in the band. So the band, we were touring, and I couldn't understand why my clothes didn't fit. I thought I got mad at my clothes. I didn't know what was happening. And then I heard, we got back home from the tour, and we went back to our regular gig, and there was a guy in the audience that had been there from our first, from our early performing days, and I overheard him say, "Is that the same girl? She's gained like 30 pounds." Which I hadn't. I think I'd gained about 15, but I hadn't gained 30. And I was so mortified, I just thought I'd die. And I don't remember a whole lot after that. I remember, you know, trying and trying and trying to deal with my weight and being so freaked out at the idea that I was getting bigger. And I didn't get much bigger. That was kind of a peak, and I don't know how much it was. I don't remember if I weighed myself or not. But what I can tell you for sure is the self-loathing was so high. You know, I hated myself. And somewhere in there then I started the thing of the night binges. I was still living at my parents' house, and I would go out with friends in the evening, and then I'd come home, and maybe even I'd restrict it all day, and then I would come home and I would binge for like 4 hours. And I tried to make myself throw up, and I now thank God that it didn't work. I just could not do it. I guess my body couldn't lose control that way. And I'm now very, very grateful. And so I just, I would night binge for days, and then I would somehow get a handle on it and control myself for some period of time. I tried using up calories as fast as I could, like, and as many as I could a day. Like, I walked all the way to school. I was in university by then, and it was probably 2.5 miles from my house, so I would walk, and I would go like 2 hours early, and I would not eat breakfast and take one piece of bread for lunch. And I remember writing myself a list. I remember saying, "Now this is ridiculous. In one day you may have one carrot, one Ritz cracker." You know, like, I was working so hard, so militantly hard to restrict my food and to use it up. And so I would walk. I burned the candle on both ends, so I tried to stay up as late as I could because I figured that would use up calories. And then I would make myself get up super early so that I would hardly get more than 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and then I would walk back to school. But of course, then I craved food. And so then if I was sitting with people, then I would eat. And hating myself, just hating myself, and never, 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 never told anybody. So I don't remember how long that went on. I don't really remember what changed it. Just different things happened in my life. My band broke up, and I moved in with some roommates, and that shifted some stuff. And I eventually did go into therapy and started understanding myself a little better. And and I think the eating stuff, I don't think I was eating in a very healthy way, but it wasn't quite as extreme and violent as it had been. And I don't remember how long that went on, to be honest. But finally, I fell in love with the person that is now my husband. And at the time, I was 23. And that terror rose up again. But this time, I just willed myself to breathe and get through it. And I knew that I really, really was, it was something really special in this man. And so it was like it felt worth it, even though I didn't understand why I was so afraid. And so I didn't tell him until years later how frightened I was, but I stuck through it. And we were together for a couple years, and we actually split up after 2 years, and then had one miserable year where we each tried dating other people and kept finding ourselves coming back to each other, and then finally we had one big long talk and realized that we wanted to kind of get to know each other better, and that led to a second time around, which was a much healthier way to be together, and we got married. And a few years went by, and we've been married for 5 years, so, and by now I was in my mid-30s, 35, and we sold our house and moved into our dream house. And I don't know why that is making me teary. So these two things happened at once. We moved into our dream house, which was up in the mountains. So for the first time, I was leaving people that I was used to being close to. Thank you. And the other thing that happened was a really super close friend of mine, I don't remember the order, but found a note from her husband on the kitchen counter saying, "I'm out of here, bye." And she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And both of those things happened in a very, very short time. And she had a 12-year-old boy and a 13-year-old girl. And I think that what came up for me was a theme from my childhood, which was this survivor's guilt that I had, because my middle brother, we now kind of think he probably is on the autism spectrum, but there were no words for that back then. So he was very troubled my whole growing up, his whole growing up. I had 3 good years, and then we had him. And it was really, really challenging, and he became a real energy sucker in my family, and my other brother and I were severely neglected because he took so much. And but I grew up with this terrible survivor's guilt, this sense of why was I so graced to be a good student and successful at all these things, and where my brother suffered so greatly for everything that he managed to learn and do. And he's a genius, and he has a PhD, and he has a good job. But it was a mighty struggle to get there. And he doesn't really have a very happy or full life. It's pretty restricted. So when my friend got the cancer and her husband left her, we were really close friends, and the juxtaposition of that with the timing of me moving into my dream house spun me back into that survivor's guilt. And I got sick and was very ill for a whole summer, that whole summer, and I just couldn't eat. I was way too, the anorexia just like slammed me. I was so afraid to eat. And yet, God guided me. I don't think I skipped a meal, even then, and I hadn't discovered OA yet. So I knew I had to eat, so I would force myself to start a meal. And maybe it would only be like a piece of toast with cheese melted on it, but I got something down me. And so I lost weight, but I didn't turn into a 70-pounder that has to be hospitalized. And some friends led me into a 12-step group, first ACA, because they said I sounded like I needed that. And then ACA members guided me to OA. So I attended my first OA meeting in March of 1990. And I It was a small meeting. There were three very overweight people, and I felt very out of place. But I was pretty surprised to hear my feelings come out of their mouths. Two of them are passed, and the other one, I hope she's still going. I used to see her for many years. And gradually, it took me a couple years to get a sponsor. That sponsor has been with me ever since. So I've been in OA through pregnancy and miscarriage, pregnancy and successful pregnancy and birth, and breastfeeding, and then very difficult health problems after the first daughter, and then another round, probably with another miscarriage in there, and you know, all the ups and downs of marriage and a second child, and got them all the way through school, and both of them have shown little signs of issues with food, but have managed to find their way pretty well so far. They're in their 20s. This sponsor has, she's a really strict AA person, and OA is like her partner. I mean, she has both programs. I think she attends more AA than OA events and meetings, but just her understanding and experience with the steps, with getting through the steps, and she has her gentle voice, has been on the other end of the phone for me for now 25 years, and going on 26. And my experience of parents who were immature and depressed and blaming, and who I always perceived that my family members were the ones who knew me best, so that gave them the most ammunition. And my sponsor probably knows me better and has never used anything against me. And gradually that has taught me a level of trust. And I've heard, you've seen your faces and heard your voices in my head, along with my sponsor's voice, guiding me and reminding me, and your voices have never been raised to me, and you have always been patient. You have always accepted my speed, my pace, my what I couldn't understand at the time, what I could do, what I couldn't see. And that gift of acceptance that I've gained in these rooms, it's contagious. Eventually, I have a greater acceptance. You know, I have gained a greater acceptance of life on life's terms. And not that I don't have my bad days, but I have the ability now to feel grateful for what I have instead of feeling like I don't have enough, or will never have enough, or will never be enough. Those feelings come, but they're not the guiding laws that they were. You know, they were like, my fences were so strict. The anorexia for me has been the effort to keep to maintain control, because it felt like I would feel better if things were in control, and things would feel better if they look okay. And also that I think I would be less blame worthy if I'm anorexic. Somehow that felt like more of a victim and less of a possible criminal, because I always felt like a criminal in my family. And and then the binging And still, you know, it's still, food is still food. I mean, I eat my 3 meals a day and some snacks sometimes. My food plan is absolutely imperfect, which is what has, or my eating, my plan of eating is so imperfect, which is what's enabled me to maintain it. Every time I've tried to write down my food or plan, make a food plan that I can, you know, write down and call in, I go anorexic. I just immediately start, or I like try sneaking food on myself. Like, how do you do that? You know? Well, I won't know if I eat this. You know, like, this is just ridiculous. It's so unhealthy for me to try to stay with the regimen. So instead, what works is for me to honor what makes me feel good and forgive myself when I make a mistake and eat something at a time that I shouldn't have because I don't feel as good afterward, or when I eat that bite and I go, I know I shouldn't be eating this, and I eat it anyway. And but there's a self-forgiveness built into my imperfect plan of eating that has made it work, and I don't even know how many years it's been. I don't count. My spiritual practice has blossomed and deepened as a result of coming specifically to the meetings in this building. I just was ready for something. It made me come 3 times a week instead of once to have it so close to my house. And there was something about the format of the meetings here, and I don't know, just it really reached me, and it was at a time that I needed it. It's probably 5 or 6 years ago now, and really I had almost made the decision to leave OA because I wasn't feeling like it was inspiring me or motivating or deepening my experience of life anymore. And it turned out to just be I needed a move. I'd been going to the same meeting regularly for so many years, and I needed to see new faces and hear new voices in a different format and sit in a different room and hear it differently. And I did. And it awakened me, and my life right now is so rich and full. My career in music has blossomed with a pretty good balance recently, and I feel inspired but not burdened, and that's a good balance for me. And I'm working on doing research for a book, and so many blessings have come with that work. And they just abound. More and more and more of them come. And I could not have begun to predict or guess the gifts that could have come. And starting to see clients in the healing arts, and that is enriching and exciting and scary and wonderful. And I just feel so incredibly grateful for being given the second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh chances that I've been given, et cetera, et cetera. I just show up. It just takes showing up. Ultimately, I'm going to hear something, you know, that I need to hear. And I do every day. So thank you for being here and listening to my story.